All right. Hello, everyone. I'm Stephen Downs. This is Federated Open Learning Resources at the 2025 Open Education Conference, October 30, 2025. I just want to begin with Go Blue Jays. One more game. Will it happen? Alrighty. Let's jump over to the slides right away, and I'll see if I can remember how to share slides. Okay, and there we go. PowerPoint slideshow. You should be seeing the beautiful starting screen. And actually, that's not how I wanted to do it. I wanted to do it a different way so that I can show you websites as well. So we'll just fix that in a hurry. Okay, screen two. I'll be showing you the whole screen. All right. There, that's better. Okay, and I'll just maximize that. So this presentation is and will be available online as well as through the official Open Education Conference channels. If you just click on that link, access denied. Isn't that fun? Never mind then. That's where it will be. Once I solve this access denied problem, I'm pretty sure I know what the problem is, but I'm not going to fix it at the exact moment. So what are we up to? Here's what I promised when I originally submitted the proposal, and I'll actually deliver on that promise in this session. I don't always. After the session, you should be able to join and learn from federated networks, create decentralized communities, co-learn with others on these networks, use a personal learning environment to support open learning, and appreciate the role of community and creativity in an AI world. Now, yeah, I'm not talking about AI in this presentation. I'm talking about federated networks, or as we call them sometimes, the Fediverse. Let me take you through some prehistory just to tie this into the open education open educational resources movement. Way back when, and we're talking like 25 years ago, there was a thing called Federated Learning Object Repositories. And for OERs, it was Federated OER Search. And the idea was that people would create open learning resources, they'd put them in their own repository, usually supported by an application like DSpace or Open Harvesting Protocol. For example, OASIS, which still exists and still runs. And the idea of a federated search is the search would look at one repository, then another repository, then another repository. So you could search across multiple repositories for a single resource. Now that had issues, and those issues persist to this day, and it had advantages. The advantage, of course, and this is really relevant today, it was a federated search was limited to a few selected sources. So you didn't get spam, you didn't get advertising, and in today's day and age, we don't get, what do they call it, AI slurry or whatever. We didn't need to duplicate the search metadata, which is a factor, and it was always up to date. It was never out of date. But the problem is, if a server joined a federated search network, that created a lot of overhead. The results couldn't really be ordered because they'd come in the order that each search repositories. There's no possibility of third-party metadata, no ratings, no evaluations, no stars or anything like that. And ultimately, it was never better than Google. Now remember, this is 25 years ago. Google's a bit different today. There's another part of prehistory is a thing called RSS. It stands for Rich Site Summary. Also stands for Really Simple Syndication. There are lots of ways of interpreting it. The idea of RSS is that you could take a web page, usually a news web page, so you'd have a number of different articles on it, put it on your web server, and put it in a special XML format called RSS. And then a feed reader or aggregator would look at your website along with a whole bunch of websites, pull the results together into a big database, and then show them to the viewer in what was called an RSS reader. RSS is still big today, despite efforts of companies like Google to kill it. And so we have, from prehistory, two basic models of finding resources: the federated model, where you check each repository, and the RSS or aggregation model, where you pull everything into a big bunch of data. Both worked, both were really good, and both were distributed in the sense that I love my system. Computer restart is required. Both were really good forms of distributed resources. In our history, though, what happened instead is everything got centralized. Search, Google. Google became the all-consuming search engine. Social media, Facebook and Twitter, which became X and then owned by Elon. And in education, we had the centralized, for each institution, learning management system. Problem with centralization is the users lost control of the process. In social media especially, it became the algorithm over connections between individuals. Google's search epitomized that, using the algorithm basically to pump advertising at people. There was the silo effect. You couldn't communicate from Facebook to somebody who was on Twitter. You had two separate individual social networks that were completely isolated from each other. And ultimately, in this whole thing, the user became the product. Access to these systems is what was being sold, eyeballs and advertisements. Really no good. Now, a little digression. In artificial intelligence itself and in machine learning, we also see these two kind of models. It's kind of neat. The one model is the aggregation model, which we see on the left of the slide here, and the federation model is on the right. So what's really interesting, and this is something that's occupied me for years, is the idea that a federated system can learn. It's a digression. I won't go into it, but there's a direct relationship between federating and learning. Another digression I want to go into, just mention, is the whole idea of decentralization in something called blockchain. Now, I know everybody's going, Bitcoin, horrible, horrible, scams abound, and they do. Forget the whole financial system. What's really interesting about blockchain networks in general, and not just Bitcoin, is that they are completely distributed and everything is done in a decentralized way. There's no central server, there's no central index, which means that they need to come up with what are called mechanisms for consensus. And you see a bunch of these mechanisms for consensus listed at the left of the slide. The most famous is proof of work. That's the thing that made blockchain use so much energy. And there's a whole bunch of other consensus algorithms. Consensus really matters in distributed networks, because if you're distributed, if one server say one thing and another server saying another thing, you don't really know what's true anymore. Kind of like depending on Fox News and MSNBC, you don't know which one's true without some sort of way of finding a consensus. So, more recent history, in reaction to all this centralization and basic destruction of social media by algorithms, advertising, and authoritarianism, we get something called the Fediverse. So we see some of the critics, you know, academic Twitters for the birds. Then we got Fediverse software, federated social mediated platforms. So I'm just going to click on this here. So we got a lot of different applications, something called PixelFed for images, PeerTube for videos, Friendica for Facebook-like macro blogging. We got content management systems. We got Mastodon and Blue Sky for social networking. Ghost as a content management system or blogging platform, and more. Whoops, come on. So, how do you get in on this? Well, it's really a lot simpler than people think. If you go to this website here, join the Fediverse, right? Now, it'll explain to you what the Fediverse is, but the first thing you do is find a community. So we'll click on find a community, and here it gives you some suggestions, you know, or what are you looking for? Video, photography, microblogging, etc., etc. Let's go for microblogging. Okay, preferred, we don't care about the regions, etc. So it's going to recommend some servers. So mostly it's recommending something called Mastodon, right? So you notice there's more than one place. It's kind of like your email. You can get your email from, you know, from Hotmail or from Google Mail or from your university provider. Or if you're really smart and dedicated and have lots of time to burn, you can set up your own mail server. So I got to click on Mastodon Social. Let's click on that. So that's going to take us to, now I already have an account on Mastodon Social, so maybe I shouldn't use that as an example. Let's use Masto. There we go. So here we go. Now, each server has its own rules. It has its own community. Why? Because it's a federation, right? Nobody runs it. So each server runs itself. So here are some rules. We'll accept those rules. And now we create a username. I'll create Downs. Whoops, what's happening here? I don't know why it did that. Come back. Accounts, google.com. Why did it do that? Oh, never mind. Okay. Email address. That's just so it can send you some email. And now we'll create a password. Oops. I have my own internal algorithm that I use to make passwords. Oh, now everybody's going to see my birth date. Yeah, I was born in the 50s. I'm old. All right. So, and we'll save that. So now I'll check my inbox. See how easy this is? So I'll check my inbox. So where's my email? Inbox. I'm going to verify my email address. Security check. Solve the CAPTCHA. That was hard. Continue. And now I am a member of this server. So display name. Save and continue. All right, there we go. I can follow a few people to get started. I'll follow Mastodon. I'll follow some guy called Jeff Atwood. And now I'll go to my home. It's preparing my home feed. Why is it taking time? Well, because it's got to gather stuff, right? And now I am a member of Masto. Now, like I said, I'm also a member of Mastodon. I'm a member of a bunch of, well, of cosocial.ca, which is a cooperative, and so on. So that's how you join the Fediverse. Really simple. Now, just as a bit of an aside, the way the Fediverse works is each of these different things that I can sign up for, like Mastodon Social or Masto or CoSocial, each of them is a standalone server. Each of them has a number of different members, and these members can talk to each other. So I can talk to anyone on the Mastodon network, and in fact, I can talk to anyone on the entire federated social network. So that includes people with accounts on PeerTube, video accounts. That includes people on image sharing accounts. I forget the name of it offhand. Anyone on any of these servers. And all of that supported by something called the ActivityPub protocol. It's a World Wide Web Consortium protocol. And that defines how all of these systems manage following, communication, etc. A little recent history, again to tie us into open educational resources, the original version of MoodleNet, not the one you have now, but the original version of MoodleNet created by Doug Belshaw and company was intended to be federated so that your instances of Moodle on your own institutional servers would be able to talk to each other and would be able to exchange open educational resources with each other. I don't know why Moodle didn't follow through. In retrospect, to me it's obvious they should have. So, how would the Fediverse support the sharing of OERs? Well, you could use MoodleNet version 1, but somebody would have to finish developing it. Otherwise, OERs can be shared even now using the Fediverse, mostly through messaging and passing of links, although some, such as Ghost, which is a member of the Fediverse, allow you to create full pages or resources. So a little example here is the OER Foundation uses Fediverse technologies to widen access to open learning and collaborative opportunities. Or PeerTube Spaces, which is, you know, some company somewhere, they allow people to create and host videos in the Fediverse, which again, they can share, including with followers in Mastodon. So if you're creating educational videos, create them on something like PeerTube, share them everywhere on the Fediverse. You're sharing open educational networks. You might be asking, well, how do you find these things? Well, that's going to lead us to the topic of community. So what is a decentralized community? It's kind of a mess, but it's kind of like real community. It's interesting because, you know, people always talk about creating community using a learning management system. But the community you create there is like, you know, just your class or may at best just your institution. Community on the Fediverse, by contrast, is spread across all kinds of different instances. So here we have one person. Here we have another person. I'm hoping you can see my mouse on the video there. And they send posts and reshares and reply and follow each other. And that creates this wide network of people linked to each other around different topics. Like these people are linked around the topic orange. These are around the topic blue. I don't know what they actually are and I can't read the text. Nobody can read that text, but it doesn't matter. You get the idea, right? So community in the Fediverse is really quite different from a community in a sideload site because it's really open, it's really vague. Some people belong to it, some people sort of belong to it. no two people ever really belong to the same set of communities. You look at, you know, what would the boundaries of this purple community here be? It's fuzzy and vague. Just like real community, you know? I mean, what's the boundary of the community around Dungeons & Dragons players in Ottawa? It's a vague boundary. You don't really know who's in and who's out. It doesn't really matter. So let's explore Mastodon a little bit. Like I say, I have an account there. And we'll just take a look at what's happening. So what I've done here is I'm using what's called the deck view. And you can set that in your preferences. So you just click on preferences, and it's down here somewhere. No, I don't know where it is. Posting defaults, whatever. It's in there somewhere. I'm not going to try to find it right away. And what the deck view does is it gives you, I'm waving my hand at the screen, gives you these four columns. And these icons up here give you different columns as well. So my home feed, this is the list of people that I follow. For any person that's out there, say Jay Ryan, don't see a first name, but okay. This is a person that I follow, right? And so I can read their posts. In fact, I clicked on their name. I can read their posts right now. Here it is, right? Something from October the 14th. Oh, that was boosted by Jay Ryan. Okay. So I can follow what they say. And so everyone I follow, here's the list of people that I follow, right? Now, there's no algorithm here. These posts are being presented in chronological order. And we can see that because you see this one was 15 minutes ago, 16 minutes ago, 19 minutes ago. When it gets really fun, it's a few seconds ago. Notifications are messages that are sent to me specifically. You can see here, this one said a couple of people favorited my post. What post? This post. You notice I just click on it to see what they favorited. See how handy this column system is, right? Here's a post that was boosted, and what that means is that they took my post and put it in their own feed, so now people who follow them can see my post. So you can sort of see how the content propagates, right? So right now, everything we've talked about so far has been what a person who a person follows and how the followers respond with likes and favorites is what they're called here, or posts. So I can favorite this like that. I can boost it by clicking on this, and I can save to my own bookmarks with the bookmark thing. Let's remember that I saved this. Hello from the audience on your existing account. That's kind of neat. I want to remember that. Okay. I can also add a post. So, hello, Open Ed 2025. Right. Now, everybody who follows me will see this. Somebody who follows me might boost this or favorite this. Then I'll get a notification here. That's the Fediverse. Works a lot like Twitter. Works a lot like Facebook, where we're just sending messages. Now, a couple of things. I can also, and content warning, just in case, I don't know what'll show up here. I can also see all the posts posted on this server. Now, this is a very busy server. It's got lots of people, and we'll see. These posts are just a few seconds old. So these are not people I follow, but these are people who are in the same server or same instance as I am. There's Alan responding, hiya, Stephen. Oh yeah, Alan, nice to see you. And it might even show up here. I'm not sure. Well, now, I mean, it's 21 seconds. It's prehistory by now. This clicking on this button is every instance in the world, or more accurately, every instance that Mastodon connects or Mastodon.social is connected to. not every instance connects to every instance. And that's how you get kind of moderation, right? There are some instances out there that for various reasons, Mastodon.social won't connect to because they violate Mastodon's content policy. So you just block the whole server. So it's not a tightly connected network. It's not a dense network. It's a little bit looser than that. But I'll tell you something about the way I use Mastodon. I never look at those. I honestly don't care. I'm interested in what the people I'm following are writing, and so I don't need to worry about the fire hose. So that's a quick look at Mastodon. So how do you create a community in this environment? Well, it's really simple. You join a site, you search for a subject or create a hashtag, you follow people who show up. So let's do that, right? So let's search for a hashtag. OpenEd, let's spell it correctly, 2025. Oh, look at that. Here we have some stuff on OpenEd 2025. Oh no, that's OpenEdX. That's one of the problems with hashtags. Also, it doesn't match exactly. Let's just try OpenEd. I'm conscious of time, so. Well, there's lots of people who are interested in open education. Anyhow, what you do is you find people who are interested in that same topic and you follow them. I'm not going to follow Newsbeep because, well, I think, you know. If you really want, you can set up your own instance of Mastodon and write your own rules for local content, and then you can create a community just of the local users of your server. It really is up to you. Just a digression. Blue Sky, which is a different kind of federated network, works totally differently. Right now, it looks a lot more like Twitter. The way Blue Sky works, if you're interested, each individual person has what's called a personal data server. That personal data server is all their posts, all their files, all their uploaded information. There's a thing called a relay, which gathers the content from all the individual personal data servers. And then there's the app or a feed generator that provides different views of all the information in the relay. What's interesting here is that Blue Sky is basically based on an aggregation model of decentralized computing, while Mastodon is based on a federated style. So we get the same two kinds of systems in contemporary federated social networking. Blue Sky introduces people and creates community using a couple of things, specifically lists and starter packs. A list is a collection of accounts created by a user, and you can follow all those accounts with one button. Or just look at it. You don't even have to follow them. You just look at the list. A starter pack is a collection of accounts curated by a user that when you click on that, you actually do follow them. So you can join Blue Sky, search for a starter pack, like say worker cooperatives, click on that, and suddenly you're subscribed to up to 150 people who are talking about worker cooperatives. Voila, instant community. So how does this all come together? Well, Steve Wheeler's talked about what he calls an open learn commons, and he hasn't done anything beyond this original post, but I thought I'd mention it anyway, because the way you look at it, you can use different services like Mastodon, WriteFreely, Lemmy, PeerTube, Nextcloud, and so on. All of these different decentralized open source tools to create an open education commons where you can create resources, talk about resources, share these resources, and actually use these networks even to give students access to these resources inside or outside of their learning management system. Outside's really important because once the student leaves the class, they still have access to the learning resource. That's really important. There's ways of doing co-learning on the Fediverse. I've listed four. You can come up with more, I'm sure. POSSE, it really stands for Publish on Own Site, Syndicate Everywhere. But I like Publish Once, Syndicate Stuff Everywhere, because I like using the word stuff in an acronym. So the idea is, and this is what I do with my newsletter, I publish it on my website, and then I send it to LinkedIn, I send it to Mastodon, I send it to RSS, I have a JSON feed version of it, or you can get it by email. So the idea is to spread it out. Why do I do that? Because that way, I don't have to pay every time somebody clicks on my newsletter. It distributes the cost as well as the content. You can also create communities of practice, for example, the Learning for Sustainability community of practice. There are academics on Mastodon, and there's a link here with a list. And best of all, in the distributed social network, you can co-create resources with others. And we'll look a little bit at that in a moment. So I've been interested in the Fediverse from the perspective of the personal learning environment. Now, you might remember the personal learning environment from 10, 15 years ago. The idea is that each individual person has their own personal network of learning resources. And here's an example that somebody created not too long ago, actually. So they had the... You know, they're using Google and YouTube for information, Office and Canva for creating, Gmail and WhatsApp to communicate, and iCloud and Google Calendar for organization. Now, those are all proprietary services. Sometimes they cost money. They create issues with sharing content. So it's not ideal. But still, that's the concept, right? An individual person has their own environment of information creation, communication, and organization services. So I've worked on my own version of the personal learning environment for years. I've created something called CList, which is a terrible name, and I apologize for that. But here's kind of an example. So here's the environment. You can find things with the search. Here's Oasis. Remember Oasis? You can read stuff from Mastodon or Blue Sky. There's a chat. You can use OpenAI to load content. You can edit the content. You can save it to your file system or to the cloud, and then you can publish on own site, syndicate everywhere, right? Publish to different places. Here's what it looks like, and I'll just pop into it briefly. So here we go. I have to log in. Now, because it's for me. These are my personal accounts, so here's an account. Downs, and here are the posts that I'm reading, and here is my message to Hello Open Ed. Here's Alan's reply. Hiya, Stephen. You remember I created a bookmark earlier. If I click on my bookmarks, here's the bookmark. Hello from the audience on your existing account. So I can take this. And let's do something fun here. I'll take the content of that, and then I'll go to my following, and I'll take the content of that. And so now they're both in this writing area. Put this forward to make it look neat. People who responded. There. Now I've created something new. I can save that. Either as a local file, or I can post it So let's post it. This might or might not work at the moment. So I've selected Mastodon.social. I could have selected Co-Social or Leftish, which is a blog. So I've clicked on published. Published, posted successfully. Now, was it really? Yeah, there it is in Mastodon. So that's just the 30-second demonstration of the tool, right? But you can imagine now how you can use this to work with open educational resources. Let's go to find. Let's look at OASIS OERs. Oh, I need a search value. So let's put geese. That's a perfectly good search value. Any OASIS OERs on geese? Yeah, here we go. Ducks and geese. Let's put that in here. And now I'll publish that, except I'll publish it to my blog and not on social media. Publish. Rats. My request is invalid. So it's a URI mismatch. Oh, I know why that is, because it believes that this is on downs.ca, and I'm using a version on ple.mooc.ca, that's why. Let's publish it on Leftish instead. That one should work. We'll find out. What I need is one of those little spinny things, right? Okay, so let's see if it did publish it on Leftish. Yeah, here we go. There it is. That's a WordPress blog. So I could have brought in content from Project Gutenberg, loaded it into my editor, edited, and then published on my blog using my personal learning environment. So that's all I have time to show you today. I'll be happy to show you more at a later date if anyone ever wants. So it's not just, this allows us to think of open educational resources as more than just books, more than just resources. I've actually grabbed a screenshot, you can't find it on the web, I had to go to the Internet Archive, of something called the E-Framework from JISC many years ago, with all the different aspects of online learning. So, you know, there's chat, federated search, harvesting, presence, scheduling, all of those different functions can be managed through a personal learning environment. So all the different ways of learning, of creating, etc., can be supported in this way. And if you put all of these into federated sites, you're creating a mechanism for communication from one to the other, to the other, to the other. You don't have any silos. What you do need, though, to make this work ideally is something called a distributed ID, or DID. That's so that I have the same identity. I'm the same person, whether I'm on PureTube, Mastodon, Mast.to, Co-Social, etc. We don't really have that yet. It's a problem that needs to be solved, I think, before this really works. But these digital IDs are coming. It's something to watch for in the news. Once you have that, you can do decentralized syndication with your digital ID. I've been playing around with something that this guy here, totvs.lt, created called RSDS. The links are there, which allowed me to create a resource on my website that I can then syndicate using my digital ID. Something to play around with. So I did promise to talk about AI in the personal learning environment. If you look at the PLE, there are all kinds of different ways that AI can be used. I use it to translate. So, you know, you noticed everything that was in my C list was in English, but the original source is any number of languages. I can use it to find things. I can use it to create content and then edit that content. I can use it to edit, like spell check, for example. I can use it to publish, and more. You know, any of these lines almost is a place where I can apply AI very specifically. But you notice this is me doing this, not the AI. Ultimately, we might be looking at something like an AI-enabled PLE, where all of the software that I just demonstrated in C-List, AI just creates that on the fly, does all of that for you, and all you need to do is have your distributed ID and your accounts on various services, and you don't even need to worry about the software. The AI does all of that in the background. That's coming, probably not for a few years, but that's coming. Anyhow, that's all the time I've got. So I want to thank you for your time and your interest and your attention. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with me today. Yeah, I've got a few minutes. And happy to answer any questions. Somebody, Alan said, any WordPress site can become its own Mastodon instance with the ActivityPub plugin. Quite right. Anything else? I'm looking in the chat here. Looks like FediGB.com, squinting at screen. Oh, hey, I slop, but I like slur. Oh, right, the term is slop, yeah. All right, any questions, comments? Hello. Yes. Yeah, so you know, where did the promise of connectivist open learning go? It really depends on where you look, right? If you're looking at traditional educational institutes, they favor the content delivery mode and siloed education mode, and they'll probably favor that until the end. I'm not sure, and I don't think it's really possible to change these institutions from the inside. Maybe it is, and I could be wrong, but you know, your comments suggest that probably it isn't. If you look outside institutions, however, and even to some degree within institutions, you know, I mean, I ran an item in my newsletter just a few days ago showing that the majority of learning that takes place, even in formal academic institutions, is either online or hybrid. So it's beginning to shift. It's just kind of slow. But outside the institutions, this connectivist learning that I've talked about is already happening. It doesn't happen in an organized, neat, and structured way, and you don't really get credentials for it. Just to relate my own personal experience, I do bike packing, and what that is you load everything you need on a bicycle and then you ride off into the wilderness. I bike packed through Iceland last summer. I did not take any classes on bike packing, yet I needed to learn a ton of stuff. And I learned what I needed to learn through, well, through practice and hands-on, and also talking to people in bike stores around here, but also in YouTube and PeerTube videos on the subject, a lot of those, and also discussions in discussion forums and such. And I follow people who are bike packers. And so there is a community out there, a very distributed, very informal community of people who exchange ideas and information on how to do it, what kind of gear to get, how to use the gear, what to do in an emergency, and all of that. And that community overlaps with the camping community, and it overlaps with the hiking community. And there are decentralized tools and websites like bikepacking.com that also provide information. That network exists. And that network allowed me to take a bicycle into the wilderness and not die. To me, that's success. And you know, I think that more and more as time goes on, this becomes more and more available to people. Not the people who can afford tuition and go to university. I mean, they'll use these social networks, but these distributed networks, but mostly to supplement their traditional learning. But they're the privileged, right? The vast majority of people in society can't go to these institutions. What do? They learn in this distributed connectivist way. So I see it happening, and you know, you go online, you can see it all over the place if you're looking for it. That's my view anyways. Do you believe me? Well, is that a problem though? This is the thing. And you know, the question you ask, I think, is really insightful in seeing that. In a distributed connectivist network, there aren't really these leaders, right? There isn't really that kind of popularity. You don't have somebody with a million followers because it's just too awkward to do. Because in the Fediverse, you're kind of expected to actually communicate with people, not just broadcast to them. And so you can't have a conversation with a million people. You can have a conversation with maybe a few hundred people. And that's how this network gets created. It's a few hundred people overlapping with a few hundred people, overlapping with a few hundred people, overlapping with a few hundred people. There's no center. There's no management. There's no control. Or more accurately, management and control are self-organized. It's the same with the Fediverse, right? There are some big instances like Mastodon Social. There are some small instances like joeblog.com. And there are some medium-sized instances like CoSocial. And they all organize and manage themselves, but still interact. They interact, they cooperate rather than coordinate. They find ways of exchanging communication and resources for mutual benefit, but there's nobody in charge. And I do think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing because in history, look at what's happened when people have been in charge. It's been very often not good. distributing ownership and responsibility is, in my mind, a better way to organize a learning network and indeed to organize a society, in my view. Yep. No. Yeah. Sure, yeah. 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 That happens. You know, I mean, that happens, and there's a lot of reasons why that happens, and there isn't time to talk about this for now. But the fact that there was a single failure doesn't mean the entire model fails. I mean, you could go to Harvard and take a PhD there and fail. That can still happen, right? So, the fail, one exception doesn't disprove the general principle. Yeah, that's all I can say about that for now. I have to go because I'm giving another presentation at 1 p.m. and I need a couple minutes between presentations. But thank you for your comments and for being here. In what? LinkedIn. Yes. Yes, I am. Yeah. Okay. Bye-bye then.